Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
And nowadays, we live in a world, in a profane world, in a profane time, in which the most important god or deity is money. So we have to leave behind this profane time, and we have to allow ourselves to be who we really are, the deepest sense of our living these lives from our hearts.
That's the voice of Indigenous Elder Marcelo Saavedra. On this week's show, we speak to Marcelo about the Rainbow Warriors and Indigenous ways of being in an era of social change and upheaval. So stay tuned.
We're very privileged this morning to have with us a modern-day warrior, Dr. Marcelo Saavedra. Is an Aymara elder and very privileged to have him. He's also a professor at the University of Ottawa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sylvia. It's an honor to be with you and with your audience as well.
When I think about our struggles, you know, the walk of Native people throughout the world has been embedded as a culture of resistance, of people striving to survive, basically. So I wonder if we could begin by talking about the role of the warrior. Who is the warrior among our peoples, and what does it signify at this time of upheaval?
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to be part of your program, Sylvia. And I'd be glad to share with you the reflections I have about the warriors, male and female, that are going to come from our communities. The first thing is that the notion of people that are going to struggle against the disorder that the modern world has caused onto our communities is an ancestral knowledge. This has been passed down from generation to generation by our elders. It is a notion that has been kept alive for many years now. Actually, from the beginning of our resistant colonial powers. If you remember well, our resistance has begun at the moment of the arrival of the Europeans to our land. In the year 1493, Columbus arrived to our land in 1492. So the year after, our grandmother and our grandfather, Anacaona and Caonabo, from the Taino peoples, they started to resist. And we haven't stopped ever since. So we've counted about 500 events of uprisings, indigenous uprisings, in this last 520 years, which gives you a very rough average of an uprising per year. So we have never stopped, resisting the culture of domination and the imposition of a worldview that is really alien to us. So these people were clearly what we've come to term rainbow warriors. You know, although this nomenclature is quite recent, it began in the 70s, in this past century, we had the understanding that these people were going to come about. Like, for instance, in my language, Aymara, we call them awatiñas, and that these are like, male and female warriors. And they're very important because there is a lineage of these people over the years that are keeping and guarding the wisdom that we are beholders of, and they are passing it down as well, a very important instance about these people is that they are not going to be designated, or they are not going to become elected or something like that. They are going to be recognized amongst the people. So one of the characteristics of the awatiñas or the rainbow warriors is that they are going to be amongst us, and we are going to see who they are because of their acts, not really because of their thoughts or their feelings. It's because of the acts, because they are doing what they have to do, what their responsibility is instructing them to do for the benefit of our future generations. So they are also the ones that have been keeping our traditions, our legends, our ceremonies, our rituals alive. In that sense, they are like a bridge between our ancestors and our, you know, and those to come, our future generations. So their appearance on the land has been also predicted in the prophecies of many other indigenous peoples, not only the Aymara people, like the, you know, the nation I belong to, but also like the Hopi people. They have also actually described the you know, this new breed of beings that were going to come about when they were going to be needed, you know, and that there's a whole, you know, a series of prophecies that talk about the context in which they are going to appear. And this is true not only for Hopi people or Lakota people or Anishinaabeg people, but it's also true for people in the Amazon, in the Andes, in Mesoamerica, and everywhere else. So we've been able, as indigenous peoples, to know who these people are and more, you know, and see what their attributes are going to be.
Among the Zapatistas, it is said, pick a formidable opponent because it will help you grow and you will meet that foe, right? Can we talk a little bit about the ways we grow to meet our fears, to overcome our fears, and what is required for us to truly embody the warrior within us?
Yeah. The first thing is that, you know, we talk about the rainbow warriors and modern society and the interpretation of many modern human beings has made us believe that this is like an individualistic phenomenon, but this is not. The arrival, the coming of the rainbow warriors, it's a process, it's not an event, and it expresses itself through the community, not through individuals. I mean, in the modern days, we are so blinded by the notion of individuality that we think that we as individuals can become rainbow warriors. The thing is that, yeah, we can be rainbow warriors, but we will do so only in the sense that we are going to be part of a community. We cannot disassociate ourselves from our communities and believe that we are rainbow warriors. Actually, that's one of the first and maybe one of the most important characteristics of a rainbow warrior, that they are going to be very humble and totally fearless, you know. And also this is going to be so because they are coming from a source, and that source is love for the other. And when you understand love in its actuating sense, it's a verb, you know, it follows that when you love, you have to act. So these people are going to be acting. They are going to be fulfilling their responsibilities towards their communities. And they can do that only if they come from the community. They are an expression of the community. In that sense, they have to leave behind their individuality, their selfishness. Many of the things that have blinded us in these last, 200 years, more or less. The moment you take an action, especially if this action is geared towards, sustaining or maintaining a planet for our future generations, those to come, then you are acting as a bridge. You are actually being true, and you are honoring your ancestors, but also you are doing it for the sake and for the benefit for those of those to come. And I just want to quote something that one of my ancestors said. This was Manco Inca Yupanqui, when he was engaging in a battle against the Spaniards in the Battle of Ollantaytambo. This is the year 1537, so you can see also that this is not something recent. This is, it has a whole history behind, you know, and it's part of our stories as well. You know, and he said, remember that our ancestors have been good rulers. They have been good to the people they have provided for us. Don't ever forget that. Don't let your children forget it. I know one day in the future, a time will come when they will force us to worship their gods, and when that day comes, do what you have to do in front of them. But in private, don't forget our ceremonies and our gods. And if they force you to destroy our shrines, and only reveal what you have to, and keep the rest hidden in your hearts. And this is the most important instruction that we have received from our ancestors. Keep the rest hidden in your heart. And nowadays, we are in a time when what we have kept in our hearts have to be shared amongst our communities. And that's what defines a rainbow warrior. As you know, the flag of our, of my people, the Quechua Aymara people, the flag of the Inca Confederacy, is a square flag that contains all seven colors of the rainbow. So for us, the people, you know, the ones that have come to age and are the, this new breed of people that are actually recreating the world, this other world that we deserve to live in, and more importantly, our future generations deserve to live in. You know, this legend is very much alive, not only on Turtle Island, and basically like crafted by Lakota people, by, you know, the Cree people, by Hopi people, but it's also very much present in the resistance we've been, you know, sustaining over the years in the Andean region and the Amazonian region. And by the way, you know, this battle of the Ollantaytambo, where our ancestor Manco Inca Yupanqui, you know, delivered these instructions to our people. This was the first battle in which Andean and Amazonian people came together to resist, to continue the culture of resistance that we are passing down from generation to generation. And I see this happening, like, for instance, when grandmother and chief Therese Spence went to hunger strike, she was doing what she could do. She was being a warrior, you know, because that's also the other characteristic of the rainbow warrior, that you do what you can do, regardless if you're going to win or if you're, or if you're going to lose. That's not really an issue. You do things because that's the only thing that's been left for you to do. And you do these things out of your responsibility, out of the love you have for your people, out of the love you have for non-human nations, and out of, and of course, out of love for our true mother, Mother Earth. And when you do things like this, when you act upon things out of responsibility and love, you are coming from a position of strength, because the ultimate source of strength is your spirit. So this action has to come from a spiritual awakening, from a spiritual understanding of your position in the mysterious circle of life. And, you know, and that's basically what a rainbow warrior is. What's our role as, you know, indigenous peoples or any other people? Because, you know, we all come from Mother Earth. In that sense, we are all indigenous peoples. So what's our role in providing for the coming of the rainbow warriors? We can all be rainbow warriors when we don't boast that we are rainbow warriors. The rainbow warriors will never tell you, oh, yes, I am a rainbow warrior, so you have to be respectful to me. A rainbow warrior is totally humble. They will never tell you. They will show you who they are by their acts. But we as a community, we can provide the context in which these people are going to come about. So if you start to act according to your heart, if you are going to let your spirit guide you, and if you're going to act fearlessly and in total humbleness, then you are going to provide a part. You're going to provide what you can do. So these rainbow warriors are going to come about, and then you're going to recognize who they are. So that's our part.
How do we honor this moment? How do we recognize each other? And how do we walk together?
Yeah. I think the most important thing in our times is to be true to our mother, to our Mother Earth, Pachamama. Because industrial civilization is destroying her, is destroying the, you know, the land base that we depend on. It's destroying the only support system that we will ever have as a human species. So if we want to provide for a context, we really have to take care of her. We have to stop the raping, the systematic rape of Mother Earth. And in doing so, we are going to also become more spiritual, because the only way we can really be true to our mother is by acknowledging the spiritual relationships we have with her. And that's very hard to do, because in the modern civilization, the modern industrial civilization has caused the shattering of the spiritual relations we used to have with Mother Earth. You know, like my ancestor Manco Inca Yupanqui, and the last of the Incas, Tupac Amaru I, who was killed in the year 1567, if I recall well. He really, you know, these Incas, they really, like, one of the teachings that they left us is that when the Spaniards came to our lands and territories, they were bringing with them profane time. Up to 1492, we have been living in sacred times. Everything was sacred. Ourselves as Inca people, or Aymara people, or Colla people, or Amazonian people, Tobat people, Anishinaabe people, you know, people from the land. We were sacred people because we were sons and daughters of Mother Earth. Of course, our relationship with each other, our relationship with our own selves, the relationship we develop with non-human beings, the relationship with the spirit world, the relationship we have with the cosmos, which we call Tahpacha, all of those things were sacred. But this sacredness has been forgotten. And nowadays, we live in a world, in a profane world, in a profane time, in which the most important god or deity is money. So we have forgotten that. So we have to leave behind this profane time, and we have to allow ourselves to be who we really are in the deepest sense of our living these lives from our hearts. Because there are so many crises that are looming over our species, of all sorts and of all kinds and of all degrees, you know, and I won't make a list of them because it's just too long. But just to give one example of one of the crises that we have to resolve, I will mention the nuclear waste crisis. You know that there is like about 250 to 300,000 tons of nuclear waste on the planet. The people in Finland, they have managed to, to come up with a law that prohibits the usage of nuclear energy. And of course, they have to get rid of their nuclear waste. So they created this project, which is called Onkalo. In Finnish, it means the hiding place. And they managed, they're still building this burial place in which they're going to bury 3,000 tons of their nuclear waste that they've produced over the years. So it's going to be like buried about 5 kilometers deep into the ground. And that has to be there without being tampered with for 100,000 years. If you can just imagine that, 100,000 years. They did only this with 3,000 tons. On the planet, there is like 250,000 to 300,000 tons of nuclear waste. Here in Canada, we have the the most important amount of nuclear waste per capita, and we are the second users of nuclear energy on the planet. And, you know, we're still promoting the usage of nuclear energy despite the fact that we had like four episodes of nuclear disasters up to now. Nagasaki and Hiroshima, we have like Long Island, the catastrophe in Chernobyl, and in Japan, if you help me to recall the name of the Fukushima. Right.
Fukushima.
There's been four disasters, nuclear disasters. And even provided that, we keep on trusting that nuclear energy is going to help us deal with our addiction to energy. That's just a total, you know, it's a mirage. We're not understanding what nuclear energy is all about. And this is only one problem we have to deal with. We have climate change, we have, you know, all the crisis in the economic realm, we have nanotechnology, I mean, you know, all kinds of crises. And these are all affecting the sustainability of our world on planet Earth. Our mother is very resilient. She's gone through five extinctions so far, and she's still around, you know. So what's at stake is not really the survival of the planet per se. It's rather the survival of our world, because our world is just a reflection of the human mind onto the planet. So that's what's at stake. And so we have to take action to deal with this. If I can stress something, it'd be that, you know, be respectful to your mother and do whatever it takes you to honor that respect. Wherever you are, if you are like an Aymara like me, if you are like a Maya like you, or if you are like an Anishinaabe grandmother here on Turtle Island, or wherever you are, you came from our mother. We have a common mother. So just be respectful to her and just do what it takes you to honor that respect.
I wonder if we could perhaps in this remembering to remember of who we are also create spaces for those who have forgotten to have a place where they can become part of that spiritual grounding and have a place where we can create communities of coexistence, communities of respect. I'm thinking specifically of the examples that are being posed for us by the Aymara people in Bolivia and the ways they have been able to cross barriers of race, gender, and class, and still walking in that direction, not a perfect system yet, but walking towards creating a society that's plurivocal, that's, you know, plurinational, that has, you know, spaces for multiple voices to be heard and participate.
Yeah, exactly. Like nowadays, the the country of Bolivia, which is still like a colonial nomenclature there, we've gone through a process of very deep change, and nowadays, you know, Bolivia is not a republic anymore. We rather call it the plurinational and multicultural state. We've passed a new constitution in the year 2008. So we have a new constitution in which we have managed to consecrate some of the fundamental principles of our belief systems. And we are trying to create new sets of laws that are going to be true to this, to the precepts that we have as indigenous peoples, as Aymara, Quechua people, Toba people, and, you know, many, many other nations in what's nowadays called Bolivia. But there's still a long way to walk, because this new constitution, although revolutionary and very unique in its class in the whole history of humankind, is still like just a single step. You know, we've managed to include some of these precepts and notions and principles, but we still need to really create these new societies that we talk about. We still need we still need to devise the worldview that we used to have in sacred times. You know, if you read the constitution of Bolivia, the new constitution, you're going to see like that a portion of it is quite revolutionary and quite innovative in that sense, but the other part is still like, it still reflects the old colonial, you know, order. So that's why I say that this is only like a step, and we still need to keep on walking. We still need to keep on marching down the paths of our history. You know, we are witnessing the limits of the colonial state, because we want to create a new society based on sacred principles like Summa Kamanya, which means live and coexist well, which is a very simple and elegant understanding of our position on the mysterious circle of life. But we cannot manage to create human laws that reflect this thing, because this is more like a cosmic expression of who we are. So the laws that we can devise as human beings are very limiting and very limited as well. So I think we still have a long way to go, but the very important thing is that we have changed our course in history, and now we are not going to stop. You know, we are not going to go back to the colonial state. We know that we have to march forward, and that we need to get rid of the many perverse notions that have been imposed onto our nations and communities. And I think the change is going to happen in terms of generations. It's not going to be like a change because there is a new law or a new constitution, which is an event, really. I think it's going to be more like a process. And it goes the same thing with the Rainbow Warriors, with the Awatinas. You know, it's the coming of the Rainbow Warriors is not an event, it's a process. Are part of that process, because we are the ones that are going to nurture the coming of these Rainbow Warriors. So, and the same thing with, you know, with the gains that we have attained with the plurinational and multicultural state of Bolivia. You know, we still have to nurture the changes, we still have to bring about more changes, and we still need to walk the long way towards Summa Kamanya. Maybe Summa Kamanya, live and coexist well, doesn't imply the existence of a state. Maybe it actually denies the existence of a colonial state. So we don't really know how form this is going to take, but we know that we are going to do whatever it takes so we can get to that place.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for all your teachings today and helping us to walk together. Thank you very much, Marcelo. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Silvia. Thank you so much.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también lo profundo.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.